Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Dynasty As They Want to Be, a podcast where we drill into every episode of the iconic 1980s television series, Dynasty. I'm your host, Derek J. Lang, and with me is my co-host and husband, Kyler K. Jafari.
Less is more.
No, more is more. Isn't that how the saying goes?
I don't know what anybody's saying anymore.
I know. Nobody knows what is happening. Up is down, left is right. The thing that is kind of weird with this whole isolation business is cooking. Like, we're cooking so much more. We're not going out to eat. We're
so
not
tired
going out
of the cooking.
Bars. I'm actually not tired
of it.
Kitchen
cleanup.
I'm tired of the cleanup, for sure. Like, our dishwasher.
You don't know, but at like 2:25 a.m., while you're snoozing away, I'm like doing
scrubbing the
I'm having
crystal.
Lady Macbeth moments. I'm just like scrubbing down the kitchen and
out damn yeah. Spot in the crystal. Yeah, I think our dishwasher like talks now. I feel like it's gonna start like Audrey Tooing and being like, "Please don't feed me any more dishes."
All right, that the dishwasher is going out on the curb as soon as we're done with this.
But it's funny because I'm hearing from friends, like some people are like, "Oh, I'm eating so much in self-isolation." And I feel
now
like,
I can't cook as much as I could eat. So.
Well, I think people are snacking because they're bored a lot. But like, I think we're doing good on the eating front because we're just like cooking a square meal and we're being like really conscious about being healthy and boosting our immune systems. Where we are kind of falling apart is that we're just drinking all the time.
Well, it's easier to make a drink than it is to, you know, cook bacon and eggs.
Hallelujah.
Amen.
Amen. Amen. So we have an amazing drink that we're going to be imbibing on for this week's episode, La Mirage.
All right. Are we at the hymnal?
I mean, you have the good book in front of you.
Chapter 2. Verse 53.
What is that? Because people are listening to this, they can't see what you're holding in your hand.
This is Mom's Mr. Boston's Deluxe Official Bartender's Guide.
You're slurring your words. Have you been drinking today?
This is Mom's Mr. This is Mom's Mr. Boston Deluxe Official Bartender's Guide from 1972, which I don't even think she was old enough to drink at that time. But in protection of my own age, I will just stick with the facts. And there's these amazing photographs of like how amazing it could be to purchase liquor in those times.
A simpler time.
Anyway, we're making an aviation, which fits the theme of this show.
Well, of this episode.
I don't know if this was a true pre-prohibition drink or a very post-prohibition drink, but anyway, they drank it sometime in the late 20s, early 30s. Who the hell knows?
Well, isn't it just amazing that here we are in 2020 drinking a drink from the 20s, watching a show made in the 80s with a 20s themed party? I love that. that makes me happy.
And that's why we're here having like the best drink I think ever made, period. Not because I made it. I think there's something about this drink that I love it so much that I don't want to abuse it by making it too much, because when you abuse something, it abuses you back. And that's very Crystal heavy. Carrington. So this is the Aviation. I'm just going to read. 2 ounces gin, preferably spicy and high proof.
Spicy gin?
Yeah. We use Beefeater, which is like grandpa gin, but like, frankly, it's the only thing that's got enough juniper in it. And if you don't, you know, care about your budget, then I suppose Nollet's could give you enough juniper.
Oh, but no, that's too rich. What are we, the Carringtons?
One tablespoon of maraschino, which is not that weird red cherry juice out of a, you know, bright colored clown cherry jar.
The kind of cherries that Alexis puts on top of her.
No, the thing
food.
About maraschino is it's derived from the pit of the cherry, which is kind of a different flavor. It's also kind of cinnamony spicy.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about maraschino is apparently Napoleon, when he was exiled to Elba, took several cases of maraschino with him because that was, you know, his desert island drink, almost literally. Anyway, yeah. But that could be apocryphal. I don't know.
It's kind of like how Timothy McVeigh just wanted to eat mint chocolate chip before they pulled the plug on him.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it all sounds fun until you hear what happens next. Anyway. And plus you want this is very important, a tablespoon and maybe even a dash more of creme de violette. This is an old Victorian holdover liqueur. There's not very good representations of it anymore, I think. You know, there's the one that I like is by Rothman and Winter or something like that. And it's kind of a soapy floral flavor, but
well,
that's why you don't want a lot of it.
Expensive too. And if you're going to make this drink, you're going to go all in, because a bottle of creme de violette is going to cost you, what, $50?
No, I think it was like $28 or something. Oh, okay. But you know, like you only use a half an ounce per drink.
Yeah,
but
my unemployment check will clear that.
Don't use Creme Yvette. The original recipe is from Creme Yvette, but there's a brand going by Creme Yvette now that just sort of tastes like, you know, sugary dish.
Yeah,
soap.
I mean, if you're going to go to the trouble to make this drink, don't cut any corners.
And then you just want probably about half an ounce of lemon juice, maybe even 3/4, depending on how dry you like your drink. And, you know, just coddle it in a shaker with sufficient quantity of ice.
But what this drink is really famous for is its couleur. It's beautiful blue, violety color. And it's weird because sometimes I'll order this at a bar and it looks a little neon-ish to me. And then I get suspicious because yours are always sort of smoky and sexy and look like the sky at dusk.
Mine look like Alexis's eyeshadow.
Love that.
Well, here's the thing. If you're not making it with bullshit ingredients, then you're getting something that's like an amazing drink, maybe the best drink ever made, because I think the proportions and the ingredients kind of speak to the highest powers of alcoholic beverage, and also a sort of chemistry. But frankly, like the color makes it even that much more. And you garnish it either with one of those bright red neon goddamn maraschino cherry things, which like nobody eats them, but maybe it makes a drink. Yeah, it sexes it up. Or you could put a twist of lemon, or you could do both.
Yeah, I like the bright red ones because it gives a nice pop of couleur in the drink. And a twist of lemon, too, I think. I think that makes it.
But there's something about sexy. The whole thing. It's bright and it's sexy and it's pungent. And it implies all of the things that are going on in the roaring 1920s.
Oh, totally. I can see why they loved this drink, because it's got flair to it. It's very sort of ostentatious. But then once it meets your lips, it tells like another story as well. So anyway, cheers.
Chin chin, baby.
Well, we've been invited to the grand opening of La Mirage, so should we take a break and get into it?
Yeah, we need to get like right the hell into it.
Today's installment of Dynasty as They Want to Be is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our darlings a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/nastypodcast. That's NASTY podcast, and browse their unrivaled selection of audio programs. If you need a totally campy escape, and who doesn't right now, they have like over 20 of Jackie Collins's books on there, including my fave, Poor Little
bitch girl. I'm sure you'll find something you love too. Simply go to audibletrial.com/nastypodcast to get started today.
Welcome back. Oh my God. Last week's episode was a total fucking dud. I didn't want to say it on the episode because I want you to like listen to the whole thing.
Well, I think
we did our
best to make it not a dud, but it was
a dud. I mean, our episode wasn't a dud, but that episode of Dynasty was a dud. But this one, oh my God. I mean, you know, I love a party. So the bulk of the episode was surrounding the grand opening of La Mirage, which... who'd have thunk it? It's a costume theme party. I didn't realize that we were going to be having a theme party.
Because the thing about Fallon is she's a liberated woman from way back. So the 1920s is when women cut their hair and they had the vote.
They drank, they had sex.
We allowed people to drink, you know, yeah. So there's
we do know this about her character because remember she did dress up as like thoroughly modern Fallon.
This is what I'm saying. Yeah. Like we already know her from season one doing all of this shtick.
Yeah. You know? Well, because you might think like, well, what does the 20s have to do with the opening of this like sexy 80s resort? And it's like, well, the owner likes the 20s and she wants to dress like a flapper and have everybody drink and... you know, she is Gatsby.
There was something about the 80s that's weird here because this is like 1982 going into 83.
Yeah, I think we might be in 83 by now.
No, we're not. We're still in December, I think, of 82. I mean, I'm not going to swear by that, but not on a stack of Bibles, like Alexa says. But we're not in the full swing of like the resurgence of the economy yet. So it's kind of almost, I don't know, insensitive that they're like doing this. But again, we were talking about escapism. So I don't know. Maybe that's what the deal is here.
I'm definitely not as annoyed with Kirby this episode. I feel like she gets fleshed out a little bit more. Kathleen, what is it? Beller?
Yeah, Kathleen Beller. The thing is about Kirby, the character's not annoying. The character being there is annoying. It's just one of these, like, it's been imposed upon the audience.
Yeah, I think Kathleen Beller, I've kind of warmed to her. I think she's giving some dimensionality to the character here. We do get her kind of almost strategically planting the idea in Fallon's head to hire her as the nanny, which I like to see that sort of Machiavellian touch in the characters. We saw it with Adam, although Adam's gone kind of cuckoo bananas.
Adam's not
evil.
Very good at it, and clearly Alexis is the mistress of it.
Oh, yes, of course. She is the ultimate queen. Adam is starting to veer into tying somebody to the train tracks form of villainy. But no, I like the fact that she kind of convinces...
I like to compare him to Wile E. Coyote, like with the stick of dynamite.
Does that
whatever.
Make Jeff the Roadrunner? but no, I like the fact that she knows that they already need a nanny, but she plants that seed so it makes Fallon feel like it's her idea. So she gets the job, even though, and I didn't realize this, maybe I've misspoken previous episodes, but Kirby Anders did graduate from the Sorbonne. I thought she was just fucking some guy that went
there. Yeah, but
there.
All she got was a lousy humanities t-shirt.
And then the other thing that happens before the party is that Crystal reveals that her first husband, Mark Jennings, is on the scene. And I didn't put this together, but I guess she suspected that maybe Blake had something to do with it or she wasn't sure. And so they have this kind of like, you know, midnight convo about
it. Well,
I
mean, it's a small thing, but I feel like that's part of like how Crystal doesn't trust whoever she's married to. Maybe it's Blake this time, but she doesn't trust them. She wouldn't be blamed for it because her last husband, like, alcohol raped her or something. So,
well, so did her current husband.
Like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, like, she's married to all these, like, terrible men.
Yeah, she does have really bad choice in men, I'm starting to think.
So I don't know how much, like, she's revealing that, like, Mark is the Mark. as it were.
But Blake, of course, downplays it. He's like not intimidated at all. He's like, we'll handle it. I appreciate that you talking to me. So it's kind of a nice moment. I like them kind of coming together. And I do love that Blake is kind of struck at the breakfast table because Fallon gets a postcard or letter or whatever from Steven.
Postcards from the edge.
You mean from Hong Kong? Mic drop.
Is anybody going to do the racist music? No, we're not.
What the fuck was that
about?
Super
terrible.
Yes, I know there are millions of people in Hong Kong, Ralph. But use your contacts. Check with the oil companies in the area. Yes, all of them. And see if anyone's ever heard of a Stephen Carrington or a Ben Reynolds. Yes. Get back to me, will you?
Blake, according to this, Stephen's not in Hong Kong.
And then the last thing that happens just one moment before we get to the party is that this poisonous paint comes to fruition. And Adam is painting. They didn't strip the paneling. He's just painting right onto the paneling with this poisonous
paint.
Which
I'm thinking like high quality design and remodeling doesn't involve just putting a coat of paint over something.
Yeah, even the paint man who gets like totally talked down to. Okay.
When the guy at the paint shop is telling you what to do, you know you got problems. This reminds me of when like I was, I don't know, I won't say what age, but painting the ceiling the same color as our walls, which can sometimes be a design choice. I was told by the guy mixing the paint for me, why would you want to do that? Why would you want to paint the ceiling? Like, it was like this very matter of fact. Like,
did you put poison in that paint? Is that why I am the way that I am?
Yeah. Yeah. It's worked. I mean, 12 years later, here we are.
But yeah, I mean, even Alexis comes in and I wanted her to like call out this like garish shade of teal that he was painting it. Like, I guess he was trying to emasculate him with the shade that he mixed the poison with. I don't know. I'll see how it looks in the next episode.
Oh, that's a fun take. I hadn't thought about that. Like, I just assumed like it was just like, let's paint the walls with lead.
I don't know. It was weird, and I'm not into this idea of Adam attempting to poison Jeff with paint. And the fact that it didn't get all wrapped up in this episode makes me suspicious.
I mean, I think the last thing we have to talk about before we go to the party is,
we better hurry, our Uber's here.
Is just, well, okay, I got 28 seconds. Linda Evans and Joan Collins putting on the same dress.
Iconic.
And the costumer shop, which originally I was like, costumers, wow, that's a stupid word. But then I realized, oh, we're actually going to a costume party.
Yeah, they didn't really spell it out in the beginning of the episode.
No, they really
didn't.
This
was a theme party.
MFers. By the way, Alexis wins because they like put on these costumes that are just like, I don't know, bronze paillettes.
Was it a costume,
straps?
Though? I mean, it was a really fun moment. But when they walked out, I was like, I thought they were going to be like in flapper
I think they
dresses.
Wanted this moment to be more fun than it really was. But
well, it was fun seeing both of those body yaddy yaddies in
well,
the
what
same
you get
dress.
Is Crystal doing her Ohio practical speech and Joan Collins, a.k.a. Alexis, doing, you know, English bitchy strategic talk.
Look, Crystal. Since we're both going to be stuck here for fittings, and since we're both going to be at the same party, I think we might at least try being civilized to each other for a change.
You may call this conversation civilized, but I call it hypocritical and boring.
Boring? Me? Temper, temper. As my dear old auntie used to say, when you're angry, count to four. When you're really angry, swear. Go on, Crystal. Swear. I'd adore to hear you say something colorful and foul.
Well, it's a standoff. It is the most equal, I think, footing that these women have ever been on, because it doesn't have anything to do with their husbands or their money. They're literally just standing there first naked, which I loved that we get them in that moment, and then in this same exact dress.
All I can say is I can quote Labi, a.k.a. Dorothy Zbornak. They looked like the mothers of the Solid Gold Dancers.
Yeah.
There was no 1920s flapper happening with those, well, with the same outfit on both of them.
Heads or tails, I think they both were losers.
Yeah.
let's get to the party. This was a hot fucking party. I thought maybe we were just going to have a scene in the lobby. No. We were at the pool. We went in the office. There's like a new bar off to the side. Like, there was a band. Everybody was in costume. You know, I hate it when there's a theme party and only like 20% of the people participate in the theme, and then the other people show up in t-shirt and jeans.
I feel like this was actually kind of a royal mess. However, it works as a dramatic moment.
Several dramatic moments.
Well, no. So like, the thing is most costume parties like are 98% not good costumes. So that's fine. This is not 1920s at all. This like sets me off. Like, I'm triggered. There's no reason to be historically interested in costume. However, I am. So there's a lot of like cinched waistlines, a lot of like fringe. And it's like, these are like fringe and cinching waistlines is supposed to imply 1920s. Bullshit city. But that's fine. Whatever. We get over it. And you have Alexis and, you know, Crystal doing their thing. But that's what I love about the party thing is that Alexis says, I'm not going to wear what you're wearing. And what Alexis ends up wearing is this sort of like peekaboo vagina dress where it's just like all fringe and no panties.
Well, I guess she knew that she was going to be doing some fucking at this party. Because so she had to dress accordingly.
It's all about the Neil McVane, which is like
Congressman Neil McVane.
Excuse the hell out of me. The thing with a Neil McVane is...
Congressman
the thing
McVane.
With Congressman Neil McVane,
thank you,
is that, you know, he was kind of in like, what was it, the Waltons or
yeah, what did you Google that? Because I wanted
I'm
to
trying
know
to soften
backstory.
It up. I'm trying to not like go in so hard on it.
This was a very special guest star, or just a special guest star.
Special
not
guest
very
star
special.
No, special guests are not very special.
Okay,
But, you know, it sucks because Alexis takes him to bed in the middle of a party. And if that doesn't define a party, then I don't know what does.
Oh, if like, you don't have people fucking in a bedroom or a bathroom at a party, then your party sucks. I'm here to tell you that. I like the fact that she just stole a key and she was kind of like,
well, Alexis is like having her own key party. Like, she's kind of redefined what that
key
means.
Key party of one. But I don't think she fucked him. I think you saw them kind
of
like...
Oh, I think she did.
No, they were wiping their mouths.
Wait, do we want to have like poker bets on this? Like,
I don't want to get like too salacious, but I think maybe it was just a little bit of sucky sucky and not fucky fucky.
All right, well, I've got a queen and a jack. So I don't know what that means, but...
No, I mean, I don't think she was willing to go all the way, but, you know, whatever. They have a history. She's, you know, she's widowed. She's on the rebound. I don't know. I do get a little distasteful of the fact that she was apparently using her feminine wiles to try to, like, one-up Blake with this congressman, but I hope that she got something out of it personally and wasn't just using her body for, you know, strategy.
Well, something about Alexis... so far suggests that, you know, a fun screw, a roll in the hay might be all that she needs for a moment. Mm-hmm. So that's fine. However, to use it strategically kind of goes back to old tired metaphors of like
whoring yourself out.
Sure. That's not even a metaphor. That just is what it is.
Right.
So,
but it doesn't work. You know, this is one of those instances where Alexis doesn't win because Blake apparently is able to blackmail the congressman with some sexy stuff that he was doing in Washington, D.C. And sorry, blackmail wins over BJ's any day, and Blake knows it.
Don't look so smug, Blake. It's nothing I can't handle.
I wouldn't be too sure. This time your boudoir charms may have failed you.
Well, there's always the first time for everything.
I wouldn't argue that. But from now on, you stay out of my life, do you hear?
I guess he's going to be able to frack his way all around the world.
I think at the end of the day, Alexis goes to bed with a congressman, and she winds up turned out by Blake. So in this sense, like, we get a win for Blake. It's been a little bit.
It has.
But,
you know, Alexis has been on a winning streak here. So the fact that she gave a BJ to some congressman in her daughter's hotel and he didn't do what he wanted her to do, it's fine. It's fine. I'll get over it. And look...
you know, she needed another roll in the hay, as you say, to get over her her deceased husband. So I think it's fine. I think we can move on from that.
What I really loved in this party is that Crystal sees Mark Jennings, her first husband, there. And instead of running away or crying in a corner, she kind of just grabs Blake and she says, you know what? We're going to have to deal with this eventually. Let me go introduce you, the former husband with the current husband or whatever. I don't know. The law system is going to have to figure out who the fuck she's actually married to. But it's like very adult and cordial, and it's not like too dramatic and weird. And I kind of liked the fact that they didn't play this up like too dramatically.
Yeah, I appreciate that as well. But I also have to like question, Crystal really doesn't exercise power ever. And she kind of gets put in her place in the last two or three episodes. So we've seen that.
Well, she doesn't know until towards the end of this party that they're still married. And he said that the Mexican divorce didn't actually go through, which... why would you ever trust a Mexican divorce? Like, come on. But it seemed pretty shocking to her and that she's questioning everything. But I don't know. Can't they just get the Denver Carrington lawyers to sort of figure this all out and tie it all up? It doesn't seem like it's that big of a deal to me. I mean, it doesn't seem like Mark Jennings really like is trying to still be married to her.
I think Crystal's Pollyanna. She's milquetoast. She could have staked her claim early on, and she continues to not participate in her own defense. You know, and she's even got, you know, people coming like Mark Jennings, well, who's probably like the tentpole of her issues. Do your shit, lady. Like, take responsibility. And she doesn't.
But I thought maybe Mark Jennings was like holding some candle for her, but apparently not, because he gets a few bathtub gins in him and he's like on the diving board jumping into the water with Fallon, his boss, BTW, and having a little smoochy smoochy. So maybe Fallon's finally met somebody that can really jive with her, because they just like to party and drink and have a good time and, you know, go off in the deep end. I mean, it is a little weird that she keeps getting involved in like love triangles with her stepmother, but whatever.
Yeah, that's kind of Fallon's whole problem. She can't engage with another person without having a triangulation.
Mm-hmm.
She needs that.
Well, now it's like...
It's kind of becoming aggravating at this point.
Now it's kind of a quadratic equation, because you've got Kirby in the mix and Jeff has a little smooch with her, which we knew was happening. I'm glad that it took one episode for it to happen and we weren't waiting around for him to go out there.
Yeah, I feel like at this point, the only reason Kirby needs to exist is to...
fuck Jeff.
Drag Jeff out of this sham marriage, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which we're probably going to get. I don't remember, but it doesn't kind of matter because I don't love Kirby. So I don't know. The whole thing is very ambivalent.
But then Adam has eyes for Kirby, which is like super awkward. So that's a whole nother like love triangle that's happening, because you've got Adam way overdoing it when she like drops her purse, which first of all, what motor skills does she have that she can't even hold like a little purse up as she exits a party, and then spills her lipstick and condom and everything out onto the dance floor, and Adam's got to come help her out. But what a fucking creepo he is. Jeff comes and saves the day, and Adam is left literally on his ass.
You okay?
Yes, I'm fine.
Now be careful driving home. After all, you are my favorite little girl.
I'm not a little girl anymore. Truly, I'm not. That's for helping me out when I needed help.
My pleasure.
The craziest thing of all is that Kirby may have a way more interesting backstory than I was giving her credit for. And there's this count from France or some sort of European country roaming around the party that recognizes her from galas in Monte Carlo and Provence and whatever other French...
Yeah, Kirby's been passed around, apparently.
Was Kirby hooking in France? That makes it's her not way called hooking more in interesting. France. Prostituting in
it's
France?
Called Le Gagné.
What does that mean?
It means getting paid.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I just made us some fake French.
I guess if she was gaguenying around France, it makes her a lot more interesting. But between that and Adam creeping on her, she like pieces the fuck out of this party pretty quickly, which why was she invited anyway?
What I like about party scenes as differentiated from dinner party scenes, we've already talked about how dinner parties bring people together, but party parties, which is to say not a dinner party, but a party, bring together somebody
a
like...
a cocktail party where the hors d'oeuvres are hot.
Well, there's that too, but I'm just talking about Fallon and Mark, and they clearly dislike each other, and yes, she agreed to hire him before.
I don't think they clearly dislike each
other. But now that
other.
There's a party, it's... like, well, you know, parties kind of like lift the veil in everybody's eyes, and everybody's decided, like, well, we'll have a drink and a hot canapé and jump in the river together, you know. So I do like that Fallon and Mark sort of like come to terms in the pool over a Lusitania float.
There is something about this structure that just really works, you know. I like large parties, they're so intimate. At small parties, there isn't any privacy.
Yeah, it's an Oscar Wilde quote. Ha ha.
F. Scott Fitzgerald, you bitch.
Well, he was copying Oscar Wilde.
How dare you? That's from Great Gatsby.
I know, but, you know, every author is like just kind of riffing on the last one.
You're drunk.
You're not drunk, and that's your problem.
I'm pretty drunk. How many of his evil?
I'm not drunk enough to go fuck the congressman.
How many of these?
Here's a key to my room, and
how
and
many
then, like,
of
the
these aviaries have I drunk?
Her over.
Do we? It seems like we have a real problem with Alexis going to bed with the congressman at the hotel.
We have a problem with it because so far Alexis has had her ups and downs, but this is a real down.
She hasn't used her body.
This is the down and out.
Well, she fucked Cecil to get those millions. How is this
That's
any
different.
Different?
She ain't getting no millions out of this senator, congressman.
Yeah,
whoever.
I guess the stakes are pretty small with this congressman. Anyway, I love this party. It was fabulous to be invited. I loved all the costumes.
It does seem like a party, though, where most people went home a little bit perturbed.
No, what are you talking about?
There's
people
at this party that didn't
people were
sit
still
right.
raging at like at 2 a.m. Kirby left at 2 a.m. and she was leaving early. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Get out of here. You weren't invited anyway. Security. Now it's time for the part of the podcast where Kyler and I talk about our lurks of the week. Oh, this is going to be very interesting because there's so much costumery. I think maybe what might be fun is, you know, we have Alexis and we have Crystal. I mean, we can agree that Fallon's outfit was terrible, right? And that's not a look of the week.
Really?
Oh, is that your look of the week?
It's definitely not my look of the week.
Okay, because I'm pretty sure that her outfit wasn't so great because they knew that she was going to have to jump into the deep end. 9 feet of deep end. Can you believe that pool at the La Mirage goes down 9 feet? Anyway,
I think it's deep enough for the top of her head to still poke out. And the whole only raison d'etre of her outfit was her helmet hair. That bugle bead helmet. I mean, there's nothing else to say. Bugle bead helmet.
And did you notice Mark grabbed it off before she went in the water?
Yeah.
So I think Nolan Miller probably was like, don't get that in the water.
That was a priceless object, clearly.
So, but between Alexis and Crystal, who did you like? Because they were, you know, going tat-tat-tat. Or did you think, like, somebody else had a better look?
Honestly, I'll say the extras all were better dressed.
Shut up, get out of here.
If we're going to get into like vintage costumery, which I hate to nerd out, however, there was a lot of like cinched in waist and paillettes and fringe and sequins. And
here's the thing. This isn't the BBC. We're not doing some historical recreation.
I get that.
It's a party where, you know, it's a 20s themed party. It doesn't mean that we're beholden to the same silhouettes. And
my thing is that Crystal is wearing something that is, it's not flapper in any way. It's not 1920s attire.
No, it wasn't.
It's cinched in the waist. It accentuates way, it's the boobs.
Would you quit saying cinched in the waist?
But that's the problem. Like, it's darted, it's cut, it's showing the cleavage.
Well, and then she's got that crazy cape on.
None of this was like happening. Like, I don't know what people were thinking in the 1920s were. I think at this point, everybody was trying to liberate women or just like feel like they're so excited they can't hide it.
If it's a battle between Alexis and Crystal, I have to say
Crystal doesn't even have a look. That's not a look.
It's
a
look.
No, that's Star Search. And Ed McMahon's giving her 2 stars.
I am not a member of the Thoroughly Modern Millie Historical Society.
It's just bronze paillettes with spaghetti straps.
Her hair looked amazing. Her hair looked great. I liked the way that the feather was in
the
hair.
Her hair looked the same the way that it always looks.
No, it's up higher. Her hair is up higher.
Haystack and a high
dude. The cape is great. The cape matches it, but then it also has a great jewel detail that goes across
the
chest.
There's nothing exciting about what she's wearing except it's sparkly, which that's like everything in the 80s. So, no.
It's gold. It's glittery. Her
bronze.
Hair looks
it's
better
not even
than
gold.
It's ever looked. It's great. She wins.
I actually liked Kirby's nude.
Okay,
beaded.
You're just going for whatever is historically accurate. You're not going for what looks the best.
Wait, you really thought that what Crystal was wearing looked the best?
Yes.
Oh, that was.
Anyway, go on. You liked Kirby. Go. What did you like about it? What did you like about the way Kirby was dressed?
I mean, you want to sit here and talk about, oh, it's fine to take liberties with historical costume, which is fine. Like, nobody's here to worship at the altar of 1922. However, I do
apparently think, you are.
I do think that Kirby's costume kind of did the best sort of rendition of mixing the two. It was a nude color, which seems in fitting of the spirit of that time period. And the beading is not super shiny, but extremely detailed. And it's a soft texture despite the shininess of the beading. And the cut is, you know, below the waist and appropriate to the time. But also she looks like a pretender, which is like totally her character right now, at least.
And I did like Kirby's makeup. It was very nice. If you think that Dynasty as They Want to Be is the bee's knees, leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher, or wherever you can leave reviews of podcasts. Give us 5 stars.
I think it's the cat's ass.
I know that we're completely zazzled in this episode, but afterwards, be sure to follow us on the social media.
Be sure.
We're at Nasty Podcast. That's NASTY on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all the places. We want to make sure to thank the artist Lindsay Mound, who designed our gorgeous graphics, and DJ Jugo, who made our amazing theme song.
Really, anyone who tied their shoes or wiped their asses.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to go see a man about a dog.
Wow. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.